but they seemed to be purposefully stalking across the desolate land, as if each of them had a goal in mind. Steiner stared too, open-mouthed, as she sat before Kossoff's desk. The wall display was following one of the huge cats as it padded over the broken stony ground. "It's hunting," she said. "Must be hungry," said Peterson. Steiner nodded. "It's been inside that egg-like thing for nearly 4 decades, at least."
"Hungry, all right," Peterson repeated.
Kossoff shook his head. "But they go right past batches of those rodents without blinking at them."
"And the rodents don't seem to be afraid of them."
"I would be afraid," Peterson said with some fervor. "Look at those fangs."
The desk phone announced, "Breaking orbit in 6 hours. Prepare for departure." Kossoff wondered how long the surveillance satellites he had just ordered to be put in place around Beta could maintain their orbits when Beta and Gamma made their close approach to one another. "Whatever," he told himself. "We'll put up more of them once the two planets have parted." But he couldn't tear his eyes away from the display screens. "Where is that damned beast going?" he wondered. "What's it up to?" "Tiger, tiger, burning bright," he recited in an awed whisper. "What immortal hand or eye dared frame thy fearful symmetry?" Coincidence. Sitting before the cook fire in front of Minx's hut, Brad realized that he didn't know the gamin words for fun or entertainment. Maybe there aren't any, he thought. All they do is work from sunup to sundown. They don't even have sex. His own VR sessions with Felicia were at an end. The starship had left Gamma and established a safe haven orbiting Alpha, some 30 million kilometers away. He still spoke with Felicia every night, but it was a stuttering, cumbersome communication, disrupted by 3-minute-long breaks. Less a conversation than an awkward pair of monologues. Now, as twilight darkened into night, Brad said to Minx, "You work all day long." Minx answered in his low buzzing words, and the computer in Brad's suit translated, "Death time coming." "You are getting ready for the death time?"
"Yes, we must."
The four other gamins sitting around the fire seemed to be ignoring Brad and Minx, sitting quietly, somberly, while the cookpot bubbled and the night grew darker. "You don't work this hard all the time," Brad probed. "Only when death time is near?"
"Yes," said Nx. "When the year begins and we enter the world, there is time for..." The computer failed to translate the last few words.
"You don't work all the time then?"
"Not needed. There is time for..." "And..."
Singing and dancing, Brad mentally filled in the blanks. But he found it hard to picture these solemn, hard-working farmers singing or dancing. Then he remembered that even the dourest frontier settlers in the old American West made time for barn dances and hoedowns. Yes, but they were sexual creatures, he knew. How much of our attitudes about relaxation and enjoyment are based on the need to attract sexual partners? Brad fell silent for several long moments, knowing what he had to ask next, wondering how to phrase it. Finally, he started. "Nx, are there any children in the village?" It was Nx's turn to fall silent. At last he asked, "What are children?" Brad wondered if the translator had conveyed the word properly. He remembered from his history classes that the earliest attempts to create computerized translation programs had produced some spectacularly foolish results. Input in 20th century English, out of sight, out of mind. Computer translates into Mandarin, then translates the Mandarin words back into English. Output, invisible idiot. Sweeping his arm to indicate the entire village, Brad explained, "All the folk here are the same age." Brad had learned that the villagers referred to themselves as the folk. All others, including Brad, were strangers.
"Of course," said Nx.
"Aren't there any folk who are younger?"
"Or older," he added mentally.
"Younger." "You are all the same age?"
"Of course."
"How can that be?"
"We all came into the world in the same season."
"Came into the world?" Brad asked. "From where?" Nx pointed toward the farmland.
from the eggs our elders laid in the fields.
Elders?
Where are they? All gone. Death time.
They all died?
Of course. Killed by monsters from Beta.
Brad felt stunned. All of them? Every one of them?
That is what death time is. Everyone is killed except for the Rememberer.
The Rememberer?
Dern is our Rememberer. Dern will teach the new folk once they have come up from the ground.
You mean you're all going to be killed? All of you?
Perfectly calm, Mx responded like a teacher dealing with a backward child.
Everyone, except for Derm. That is what death time is. Monsters from Beta kill us all. Next season, new folk arise from the fields after the monsters have gone.
No, Brad thought, it can't be. The translator isn't getting it right. He asked,
new folk arise from the fields?
Pointing to the farmland beyond the edge of the village, Brad continued,
from there? From the farm?
Nx said, yes, from our seed.
Brad shuddered through the gamin's evening meal, then hurried back to his shelter and called Little John. The aborigine was in Kossoff's office as usual. Knowing that the two of them had undoubtedly heard his conversation with Nx, Brad asked without preamble,
do you believe it?
And then waited for his words to reach the starship orbiting Alpha, and the response to get back to him. Finally, Kossoff said,
they all die, every one of them, except for their rememberer, Derm.
That's a lot to swallow.
Killed by monsters from Beta, Brad said.
The 3-minute interval between them seemed to hang for an hour. At last, Little John replied,
that's mythology, it must be. They're trying to frame an understanding of the catastrophic weather conditions that arise during the two planets' conjunction, trying to make sense out of conditions that are far beyond their comprehension.
But Kossoff swung his head negatively.
We've seen monsters on Beta.
And Brad's screen suddenly showed one of the 6-legged giant cats prowling across Beta's hard scrabble surface.
My God, Brad gasped.
This time the 3-minute gap was filled with views of the big cats. Brad gaped at them. Monsters, all right. Then Kossoff's face filled the screen again.
It's a coincidence. A sheer coincidence. Those animals don't have spacecraft. They can't cross from Beta to Gamma, even when the two planets are at their closest.
Little John added, all mythologies include monsters. You know that, Brad. Monsters and gods and heroes.
I haven't heard anything about gods or heroes, Brad objected.
Only monsters. As he waited for their response, Brad thought about Nix's description of the death time. Monsters that kill them. It can't be a coincidence. Then Kossoff said,
I know it's bizarre, uncanny, but the only reasonable explanation is that it's a coincidence. It has to be.
It isn't, Brad insisted silently to himself.
A coincidence is what you call a phenomenon when you don't understand its actual cause.
Then he realized, and if it isn't a coincidence, if those cats somehow get here to Gamma and kill everything in sight, they'll kill me too. Revelations. Though he tried to hide his fears from Felicia, she immediately saw the danger Brad was in.
They'll kill you too.
Attempting to ease her alarm, he said soothingly,
no, I think Kossoff is right. There's no way that an oversized tiger can fly 100,000 clicks through the vacuum of space and get here to Gamma. The talk about monsters and death time is mythology. Just a scary tale. Nothing to worry about.
Still, once he'd finished his nightly talk with her, Brad rummaged through his equipment case until he found the laser pistol and the video chip that showed how to use it. He slept fitfully that night, awakened time and again by wild dreams that jumbled his memories of the deadly avalanche at Dithonium Chasma with new terrors of giant 6-legged beasts tearing him apart with their fangs and claws. He awoke weary, emotionally drained, soaked with cold perspiration. As he scrubbed himself down with the antiseptic pads from the lavatory supplies,
Brad decided to question Derm more closely about the death time. After all, he reasoned, Derm's the closest thing these people have to a village chief. If anyone can shed more light on this situation, he'll be the one. After popping his breakfast pills and pulling on his biosuit, Brad ducked out of his shelter and headed for the village. It was unusually windy, he realized. Flat gray clouds were scudding across the normally blue sky. Even inside his cumbersome helmet, Brad could hear the wind moaning and the trees sighing. Don't let your nerves get the better of you, Brad told himself. Weather changes are normal. You've lived most of your life on Mars, where the air is so thin that there's hardly any weather to speak of. Well, yeah, there's the dust storms now and then, but you get through them all right. Still, he looked up at the threatening sky and saw through a gap in the ominous clouds the curving bulk of Beta looming bigger than ever in the sky, like a baleful, blood-red eye glaring down at him. Derm was standing at the entrance to the building Brad thought of as the village's longhouse. The gamin was alone, gazing off at the farm fields of the village's edge. Everyone else seemed to be in the fields working. "Hello, Derm," Brad called as he approached. "Hello, Bird." Standing beside the village chief, Brad asked, "Is everyone working in the fields today?" Derm replied, "Everyone. Death time coming." Brad tried to think of a diplomatic way of broaching the subject, but after several moments he simply asked, "Can you tell me about the death time?" "Monsters from Beta kill everyone." "Except the Rememberer," Brad prompted. Derm seemed to sigh. "Sometimes even the Rememberer is killed. Then the new folk must learn for themselves how to live." "And new folk arise from the farm fields?" "Yes." "Can you show me?" Derm fell silent. He's thinking it over, Brad thought. He's trying to figure out how much he should tell me. At last, Derm said, "You are not one of the folk. You are a stranger. I come from a different village, that's true. Only the folk may see the seedlings. It is forbidden to strangers." Brad made a mental connection. "Then strangers come to this village?" "Now and then."
"Why?"
"To tell us of their villages, to share food, to trade tools."
"Are the strangers also killed in the death time?"
"Of course." "How can there be enough food for the new strangers if the old strangers do not die?"
"And the folk here in this village, they die to make room for the new folk?"
"Yes."
Brad waved his arm in the direction of the hills he had come from. "But this world is almost empty. There's plenty of room for new folk, new strangers, new villages."
Derm's tone of voice changed. "That is not our way."
Is he shocked? Brad wondered. Angered? Have I committed blasphemy? Nevertheless, Brad pushed on.
"But you don't have to die. You can live."
"No, Bird. We die so that new folk can live."
Brad fell silent. "I'm treading on ground that's sacred to them," he realized.
Durham said, "Even if we wished to live, the monsters from Beta would find us and kill us. That is the way the world is."
Remembering the big cats he had seen on Beta, Brad realized that the gamins had no weapons to protect themselves beyond simple hunting sticks and scythes. They don't even seem to have the concept of self-defense. They are ready to be killed so that their next generation might live.